morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you who have come to be like me, recognizing that there's something very troubling, especially destructive, about the institutions that are affecting our world. Yes, it is religion and politics, media reporting and military invasions, jaundiced economic schemes, all of which have elements that are said to be the solution to our problems. Yes, the Federal Reserve is going to solve our economic problem. Our military is going to keep us safe. Our media is going to tell us what we need to know to be a democratic society. Yes, indeed. They're all presenting themselves as the solution to the very problem that they have caused. So on this program, rather than simply presenting their news, our mission is to understand who is causing the tragedies that are besieging our planet, why they're doing so, and what they will actually deliver. And that is why, typically, in our second hour, recognizing that there is no solution in rearranging the color of the deck chairs on our Titanic of state, that we turn to God to listen to His solution. We're going to use His tool as well, which is evidence and reason, to examine what He is offering, because He alone provides hope. Our telephone number, if you want to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. And that it is Friday, and we're expecting to be able to ask questions to IQ Al Rasuli to understand the direct connection between Islam and the terrorist assault on our world today. We will begin in Yahweh's Torah. Yesterday, as we concluded our program, I shared a statement with you that was quite telling. It said, "And they heard the sound of Yahweh, the Mighty One, walking in the protected and enclosed garden. Concerning the spirit of the day, the man, Adam, and his wife withdrew and hid from the presence of Yahweh, God, in the midst of the sheltered garden's trees." So when we read this, we know a number of things. One is that Yahweh was physically present with Adam and Chawa. You cannot make a sound if you're strictly spirit. You cannot walk if you're strictly spirit. Now, since God is spirit, He is akin to light. Light is energy. Spirit, energy, light are all synonymous concepts. That being the case, we have an insight here that helps us understand this transition, because God has said that He spoke the universe into existence, used words to organize energy, to transform it into matter, and then to speak that matter into life. We learn the power, therefore, of words. But God, at that time, equates Himself to light. Now, and once before, He is equating Himself to having a physical nature. The previous time was when He, Barak, knelt down in love to lift His creation up. This time, it depicts Him making a sound as He is walking in the garden. For many, this is a very difficult concept, particularly for those poisoned by the Christian religion. For them, because of what Paul wrote, they have been led to believe that that God is manifest in a Trinity, and that God has three distinct personas, and that the completeness of God was represented by their Jesus Christ. Now, you think if you're going to make a religion based upon an individual being the totality of your God, you would at least get His name and title right. Jesus isn't remotely accurate, nor is Christ. Christ is not a last name. Moreover, Yahusha, who is the Messiah, said exactly the opposite, that He was a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. We know, as a result of not only Yahweh's testimony, who said this but also because of Einstein's revelation, his formula, where he discovered, and it has been demonstrated valid, all you have to do is look at the film of a nuclear bomb, or just enjoy the light of the sun, and you witness it in your midst, that energy and matter are the same thing. And that while they are exactly the same thing, you have energy and matter on either sides of a equivalency sign, and E equals M C squared. The C squared represents the speed of light times the speed of light. So while energy and matter are the same thing, they aren't the same amount of the same thing. Energy has much more to it than does matter. Matter is a diminished form of energy. And so Yahusha is nothing more or less than a diminished aspect of Yahweh. It isn't that God himself becomes diminished, because that would be absurd, to take the totality of God and for him to diminish himself. No, it's not what that means. It means you set apart an aspect of yourself, and then that aspect is diminished for it to go from being energy to matter. Same exact substance, not a second God, just an aspect of God diminished to be corporeal. That is what we're witnessing here in the garden. It is exactly what we witnessed with Yahusha. Paul lied when he said that the fullness of the Godhead resided on him bodily. It's an impossibility. It is wholly incongruous with his life, his conversation, his witness, Yahweh's statements regarding him. It is proof that Paul should not be trusted. It is proof that the basis of the religion of Christianity is fraudulent. God, however, can take on physical form. He did so here in the garden. He was found walking in the protected garden enclosure. Walking is the principal human activity that God associates with his family-oriented covenant relationship. Those children who participate in his covenant are encouraged to walk. Why? Because when we're walking, we're engaged. We're not sedentary. Relationships require both parties to participate for them to be of any value. Second, when we're on our feet, we're not bowing down. So it is wholly incongruous with every religion that has ever been conceived. God does not want us bowing down to him. His idea is to get on his knees to lift us up. The opposite of the religious perspective. And when we're walking, we're discovering, we're going places. That's God's idea of a productive use of our time, is to go out and explore. Now, he was walking in the protected and enclosed garden. It was no longer the Gan Eden, but it was still the garden. It was a productive place that was conducive to life. Eden, of course, means great joy. Now, there was not total satisfaction in the garden, because Adam and Chawa had chosen to ingest evil. Concerning the spirit of the day, this is translated, and it's really La Ruach, which means it's even to approach the spirit of the day. But it's translated in most English Bibles during the cool of the day. Well, La does not mean during. It's a preposition that speaks of approaching, of moving towards. And Ruach is spirit. There was a spirit of this day that God was going to approach. It was the serpent. The serpent was a metaphor for the nature of the fallen spirit that is Hasatan, the adversary. The adversary is not a physical being. Satan does not have physical form. Satan is not going to manifest himself as the red satyr, horned, tailed, ugly manifestation that you you see of him in illustrations. He does not have a physical form. The serpent was a metaphor. Yahweh was moving toward the spirit of the day. The spirit of this day was Satan. The moment you misconstrue the power of this, which is why English Bibles all changed it to during the cool of the day. Well, Ruach doesn't mean cool. There's nothing even remotely cool about Ruach. It's spirit. And nothing remotely akin to during associated with law. It means toward. Could mean concerning, about, but it's toward, approaching. Is that they wanted people to disassociate spirit with Satan. Why? Because the Malach, which are the, it's translated agelos in Greek, and then transliterated angels in English, they're spiritual beings. Paul, in his second letter to the Corinthians, wrote that he was demon-possessed, that he had one of Satan's spirits permanently inside of him, controlling him. Read 2 Corinthians, is exactly what he says. But you see here, English Bibles don't want you to recognize the spiritual nature of Satan. They'd much prefer Satan to be a caricature, just like their Jesus Christ is a caricature. Just like, you know, when Barack Obama wanted to bomb Syria, he made a caricature of Assad. Just like when George Bush wanted to invade Iraq, he made a caricature of Saddam Hussein. When he wanted to invade Afghanistan, there was a caricature of Osama bin Laden. We create these demonic caricatures to have enemies which distract our attention. Hasatan, the adversary, is not a physical being. He is a spiritual being. And he is the spirit behind religion. He is the Lord of religion. It is one of those truths that is important for us to know. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We're considering what we can learn from Yah's testimony. And the first thing we have, two things actually, we've discovered thus far, which is that spirit can be transformed into a corporeal manifestation. And that this transference is very much like E equals MC squared, so that the part of God that is set apart for the purpose of the corporal, physical interaction is a diminished aspect of God's nature. Does not create a second God. The Trinity is a Babylonian religious concept. The second is that God has a name. It is Yahweh. He declared his name right in this statement, that Yahweh is the individual that they heard. The garden was no longer Eden. It was no longer totally satisfying. It was simply a gone at this point, because Adam and Chawa disregarded Yahweh's instructions, and they consumed evil. And we learn that every English Bible has deliberately, knowingly edited the text to have Yahweh walking in the cool of the day, when in fact the terms that God chose were La Ruach Yom, which is to approach the spirit of the day. So we spent some time considering why they would make that change, why they would knowingly and deliberately copy edit God in your English Bible translations. And the reason is fairly obvious, that in the religion of Christianity, God has become a caricature. One, the Christians haven't a clue who his name actually is, what his title is, because if you know his name, you know that he cannot be Jesus. If you know his name, you would not venerate him, because his name means Yahweh saves. You would look through him to Yahweh. If you knew his title, you would not be a Christian, because the Greek word that is translated Christian, transliterated, actually speaks of being drugged, the application of drugs. You would know that Masaya means the implement doing the work of Yahweh. And therefore, you would look through him to Yahweh, not worship him. We consider the fact that not only is the Jesus Christ of Christianity a caricature, but so is the Satan of Christianity, always presented as an ugly, corporeal individual, when in fact he doesn't have a physical nature. If you were to see Satan, you would see him as light. He's beautiful. That's how Paul saw him on the road to Damascus. Flashing, beautiful light. It's a spiritual being. And that serpent in the garden, when it's represented as a serpent and drawn as a serpent, misses the entire message here, one that is covered over by the fact that Ruach was not translated spirit in this statement. The serpent is a metaphor for the style, the approach, the venomous nature of this spirit that is called the adversary. So the man Adam and his wife, the Isha, withdrew and hid. They chaba. Now, they'd had this intimate relationship with God. But now that they knew that they had disregarded his testimony, they knew that there would be a consequence, that they were now separated from him, and that by them withdrawing and hiding chaba, it says that they chose this separation for themselves, just as does everyone who chooses religion over relationship. And they withdrew from the presence of Yahweh. Yahweh, again, using his name. You won't find that in your English Bibles. No, you'll find Yahweh's name on both of these occasions replaced with the name and title, the Lord. God tells us that the name and title, the Lord, is the name and title of the adversary, Satan, HaSatan. And this is really essential to recognize. It's another place that proves that your English Bibles are not trustworthy. You just throw them away. They're useless. That they're counterproductive. By changing God's name, Yahweh, to the satanic title, the Lord, everything that God is interested in achieving with us is upended. You see, lords enslave. Lord's control. Lord's rule over. Yahweh has no interest in any of those things. He wants to be our Father. His purpose is the covenant. You do not worship fathers, you do worship lords. You do not pay homage to fathers, but you do lords. Lords control, fathers do not. It is the difference in life and death. And it was twisted in your Bible. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're dissecting Yah's testimony in what is an extraordinarily revealing passage. One of the things that we learn from this particular statement comes from chaba, which was to withdraw and hide. The plain reading of the text conveys the consequence of ignoring, even rejecting God's instructions. God has outlined his teachings, his guidance, his directions, his instructions in his Torah, which is what Torah means. Guidance, teaching, instructions, directions. And he's outlined them in his Torah. Most everyone has chosen of their own volition to do exactly what Chawa and Adam did. To subtract from them, to add to them, to ignore them, to even reject them. And the consequence is always the same. You witness the consequence right here. You are choosing to withdraw and hide yourself from God. That is what happens. It's extremely important for everyone to embrace that reality. That is why they're depicted withdrawing and hiding. When you ignore God's Torah guidance, you are withdrawing from God. Moving on to the next statement, we find that God has a provision for those who have withdrawn from Him. You see, when you withdraw from God via a religious choice, where the religion is always the means to add to, subtract from, and twist God's testimony, Christianity is the most effective counterfeit in doing this. Islam is the most blatant version of HaSatan's worst wish list, where Satan himself is presented as God and therefore is achieving his goal, which is to be worshipped as God. If you choose religion over relationship, if you choose to therefore ignore God's Torah instructions because you have been told that it doesn't apply to you, just as Satan said, so what if God said? That's what Paul said. The Torah doesn't apply to you. So what if God said? That's like Muhammad. So what if the Torah says? The nature of religion. So what if God said you listen to our religious edicts? So if you are a Christian, if you're a Muslim, if you're a rabbinic Jew, if you're a religious Jew, so what if God said? They have their Talmud. Then you have chosen to hide yourself and withdraw from God. You're estranged from Him. You are not part of the covenant relationship. You can have no relationship with God. You are not known to God. You do not know God when you make that choice. So, what is the option? Is there a way back? Because most all of us are born into a world that is no longer Eden, no longer satisfying. So is there a way back? Does Yahweh reveal the way back in his very next statement? Listen. Yahweh, not the Lord. Yahweh, the Lord is the one who is the spirit of the day that he was approaching. Yahweh, Almighty, Kara, called out to the man, and he said to him, where are you? Estranged from God is where he was. But why did God, the very first verb, explains the way back. But if you're just reading your English Bibles, you're going to read that it was the Lord God, which is Satan. The Lord who wants to be God is Satan. And you're not going to have Kara staring you in the face. Kara is the way back. Yahweh, Elohim, Kara, Adam. So what is Kara? Why is this verb so essential? Why is the first thing Yahweh said to Adam the way back? The solution. For those of you who have read yadaya.com, intro2god.org, questioningpaul.com, or have listened to this program for any length of time, know the answer to that question. Kara is in the top two or three most important verbs in the Torah. If you observe Yah's Torah guidance, then you know what Kara means. That Kara is the answer. God's first word is the answer. If you have been religious, if you have been political, if you're willing to let go of those things that have withdrawn you from God and hidden you from God, where God has to say, where are you when you are religious because you have been hidden from God, by your religious faith, by your political affiliations, then Kara is the answer. It's God's solution. Kara is the basis of Mikra. Mikra, based on Kara, is God's invitation to call us out of the world of religion and politics, of the world of the place of separation, to meet with him, to call us back into his presence, to invite us back into his presence. There are seven mikra. Mikra is the plural of mikra. There are seven of these kara invitations. Kara as a verb means to call out. God wants to call us out of this hidden and separated place of religion and politics. It means to call us out of that. It means to invite, to summon, to meet, to welcome, to read, and to recite. There are seven of these kara events that God uses the title mikra. That is what he is inviting Adam to participate in. The first step along the way is pisach. It's the doorway to life. You see, the consequence of ignoring God's instructions is death. It's not the penalty. Life is a gift. It's temporal. At the end of our temporal existence, we die. And those who are in this place of having withdrawn themselves from God simply cease to exist. Their consciousness evaporates into nothingness. Look at a dying person as they pass away. You'll witness it. That is what happens. God has a solution to resolve that problem. And the first step along that way is the doorway called Pesach, Passover, which resolves the consequence of rejecting Yah's testimony, which is death. It is the doorway to life. Pesach, Passover. But life eternal can be both good and bad. You see, it can be bad if you're deemed to be in association with HaSatan. If your affiliation is with the Lord, if you have chosen to be beguiled by his subtraction from God's instructions, by his additions to God's instructions, by his twisting of God's message through religion, then your body, your soul, I should say, is stained with religious corruption. God's not going to allow anyone who is religious into his home. If he did, then heaven would be no better than earth. If he did, then the state that he desires of the Gan Eden would simply become the Gan, without the joy, without the satisfaction. I don't want my eternity to be the same as the existence here on earth, corrupted and polluted, devastated by the human institutions of militarism and economic schemes and politics and patriotism and religion. We've made a mess of this place. God's not going to allow that into his home. And so if you die estranged from him because you've been polluted by these things and you haven't availed yourself of matzah, unyeasted bread, where the fungus of yeast is removed from your soul, then being immortal is a bad thing because you'll spend your eternity in Sheol, eternally separated from God. Not tortured there, just eternally aware of the foolishness of that decision. And so God has seven steps that we can walk from this place of separation to camping out with him. The first step is Pesach. The second step is matzah. We become immortal. We become perfect. The third step is we become the covenant's children, adopted into his family on Bikurim, which is firstborn children, which leads seven Sabbaths to the promise of the Sabbath to Shavua, where we are enriched by his guidance, empowered by his spirit. We become just like he, so that we can enjoy the spiritual nature of light and explore the entire universe with time being something that we now can maneuver within. To versus this physical constraints of being three-dimensional and stuck in the dimension of time. as we are now, decaying, with all the aches and pains of that are associated with a physical existence. But we can also, when it serves our interest, we can, as God did, take on a physical form by transferring some of our spiritual energy into matter, just as God did here, to walk in the garden. Because there will be other gardens that we will want to walk in. Songs we'll want to sing. Food we'll want to enjoy. Stories we'll want to listen to. Campfires we will want to sit around. And so that is where we can go and where we are being called to. It's the promise of Shavuah, which is the fourth step along this way. The fifth is Teruah, where those children of the covenant who have been enriched and empowered now share what they have learned with the world, inviting everyone to participate in this process, which leads to the Day of Reconciliations, where the covenant relationship that God established with us as the means home is reconciled, restored, renewed, leading to Sukkah, where we camp out with Him again, just as we did in the Garden of Great Joy. So Yahweh God Kara, it was the answer. It was the solution for what Adam and Chawa had done. There's another interesting insight that can be gleaned from this. I'm not going to have it suggest to you that it is anywhere as powerful as the first word that God spoke after Adam and Chawa chose to disregard His Torah instructions, His teaching. Because, you know, by doing so, they withdrew. They separated themselves from God. And there are very few insights in the whole of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. There are very few things that God said as powerful as the first verb that He uttered. Kara, I'm inviting you back. I'm inviting you to meet with me. I'm telling you that the means to meet with me, Kara, is based on the Mikra. Before I go to the second insight here, one of the great and most destructive, most deceiving, diabolical things ever written was when Paul constantly harangued that the Torah could not save, that the Torah enslaves, that unless you do everything the Torah says, you're condemned by the Torah. That's what Christians have been led to believe because of the devil's advocate's writing. Paul was the devil's advocate. You see, and right in the heart of the Torah is the means for the Torah. The Torah provides the means to resolve our failures. So rather than the Torah existing to condemn us, the Torah exists to provide the way back home to vindicate us. And that vindication process is delineated by Kara, for God is inviting us to meet with Him and provides the means to those meetings. The Torah literally is written to guide us from where we are, which is in the gone, which is no longer Eden, to Eden, to great joy living with God. That's its purpose. God delineated its purpose in the first word He spoke to us. And yet, I dare say there's not one person in a million on this planet that understands how powerful it is when we read Yahweh Elohim Kara. His first word resolved the issue, delineated the solution that God has put in place to bring us back home. The second part of this that is far more subtle is the E'ata. Where are you? The religious God becomes all-powerful, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-present. Yes, the religious God is involved in the minutiae of people's lives. If you watch a sporting event after a home run or a base hit or a touchdown or a good play or a field goal, they're always pointing up to a God. It's almost ritualistic, you know, like God had a role in making that possible. He is the micromanager in Christianity in particular. In fact, in Islam, it's even worse because Allah ordains everything. You know, they answer all questions if Allah wills. Well, that's not what God's view is. God is saying that he is blinded when he chooses to be. He does not see those who choose to be disassociated with him. If you ignore his instructions, he will ignore you. God is not omnipresent. If he was, he would cease to be relevant. He would become the substance of the universe as opposed to the creator of the universe and the father of the covenant. And he is not all-knowing, because if he was all-knowing, his existence would be miserable because all but one in a million people pay attention to his instructions, to his guidance, and respond appropriately. And so God literally does not know. He has to ask, where are you? Because he does not know those who have chosen to be religious. Religion is the path away from God, where you're withdrawing from God and you are hidden from God. It is the opposite of what it claims to be. Just as the Lord, HaSatan, is the opposite of what he claims to be. Stunning insights when we simply examine the words that Yahweh spoke as he revealed them. Now we're going to conclude our investigation of his Torah teaching for this week. We'll resume it on Monday. But if you'll stay with us through the commercial break, we will return with IQ al-Rasuli and have a number of interesting questions to pose to him.